goal of this podcast is to help you break in and thrive in advertising. And we share stories and advice from some of the industry's best every week to do that. Today we have Greg Hahn. Greg Hahn is the co-founder and chief creative officer at Mischief. Greg started Mischief the same day we launched the first episode of this podcast, funny enough. Mischief, though, has skyrocketed since April of 2020, winning Agency of the Year by Ad Age, Agency of the Year by Campaign US, and the second most innovative agency by Fast Company. Greg has appeared on many podcasts and has spoken about Mischief's start on various platforms like Adweek with Griner and on episodes of Talking to Ourselves by Omid. This episode, though, dives into his start in advertising. In addition, this episode speaks to how he hires and looks for creativity and advice for the aspiring advertiser to break into creative agencies. Greg worked 15 years at BBDO and now is shaking the industry with Mischief. I'm so excited for you to hear his advice. The knowledge doesn't stop here, though. Greg recommends a few extra resources for you to break into advertising, and you can only find those on our Instagram at Breaking and Entering Pod, all one word, at Breaking and Entering Pod, and you can use those to get ahead. Now, on with the show. I'm super excited for this one, guys. This is the Breaking and Entering Advertising Podcast, and as usual, I'm your accomplice, Gino Schellenberger. Kick it, Mikey. All right, Greg Hahn, welcome to the Breaking and Entering Advertising Podcast. Thank you so much for coming on. Super excited for this episode. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking me to be on this episode.
Yeah, well, thanks for agreeing to come on. I know you're probably super busy. Where are you at right now?
I'm in Brooklyn. I'm actually in our office. We have a space in Dumbo.
Oh, nice. Is that relative? When did you get that space?
We officially opened it, I think it was like June. But we're on a, it's more like a, call it like a clubhouse space than an office space. We're kind of on a loose schedule of come in a couple times a week and then whenever you want to, you know, it's, but people actually like it. I'm really happy to see, like, it's a good gathering space. People just kind of come and hang out. So it's been fun.
Absolutely. I know a lot of agencies are trying to maneuver like the return to office. And so it seems like you guys have a pretty loose requirement or just like a loose perspective on it.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing is this isn't like a return to office for us because we never really had an office. We were a year and a half all virtual. So it's such a novelty and kind of like we can build it the way we think an office should be versus trying to back to the old way of here's what an office is. So it's been a good experiment.
Absolutely. And I feel like that there's a lot of parallels with like building it how you want. With Mischief, obviously you guys are like 2 years old now, and I had Hatem on and I had Kevin Bianca on. So this might be one of like the most recurring like agencies on the podcast. You guys in Gut have a couple people on. So just excited to have you guys because you guys are doing such great work. You're the founder of it. And what's interesting, what I think I did some research here is that you left BDO on or around April 16th of 2020. Is that correct?
That is correct. It was exactly April 16th of 2020.
And the parallel there is that this podcast, the first episode aired on April 16th. So I think we've kind of grown, like obviously you guys have rocketed, but this podcast also kind of grew up like around the same time frame as Mischief.
Well, this is a cosmic meeting we're having here.
Yeah. But it means a lot. I remember like watching you guys grow up and get some amazing client work. The craft, like the Send Nudes work was amazing. It caught my attention and just so much great work after that.
Oh, well, thank you.
So we can talk about a lot in this episode, but I really want to talk about you and your story and the advice that you have for students. Because you've been on a lot of podcasts. I know Griner interviewed you at Adweek with Gary Vee. So you have a lot of content out there, but correct me, like you don't have a lot of content just where it's strict advice, correct, for aspiring advertisers?
Not really. No, a lot of it's been the story. So I don't want to repeat too much of what people can get other places. Let's try to cover some of the territory that we haven't covered.
Great. So what was the moment you knew you wanted to do advertising for a living?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, I think when I was a little kid, I always wanted to do something creative. I think my first aspiration was to be like a cartoonist or an artist. And that grew into more writing. And I didn't really know advertising existed as a career until I started, you know, watching shows like Bosom Buddies. And anybody listening to this probably has no idea what I'm talking about, because it was an 80s show that was about advertising. It took place in the environment that they worked in, was like a cool, fun ad agency. I was like, that kind of looks like a fun thing to do. But, you know, I didn't really know anything about how to get into it. So I started as a journalism major and a psychology major in school, thinking, you know, put those two things together and maybe that's advertising. I came out pretty clueless about how to get a job in an agency.
And you went to Ohio State?
I did, yes.
Okay. I went to Illinois. You guys got great football.
We do. 4 years there, never went to a game.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah. So why'd you go to Ohio State?
You know what? I think it was just more of default. My parents went there. My brother and sister went there. And a bunch of my friends, and coming from Ohio, is just kind of felt like the natural thing to do. Had I to do it over again, I would probably gone to a different school. And at that point, I don't think portfolio schools were a thing. You know, they were just starting to emerge, so I didn't know about it.
Right. Yeah, that is an interesting question. Like, what would you do if you had to like start over, and if you knew you wanted to break into advertising today? Like, how would you do that?
I would take a much different path, because you kind of have to. I got in at the point where you could get in without a professional looking book. Like, my first book was literally hand drawings and handwritten headlines.
Right.
Which would be kind of refreshing to see now. But
you mentioned now, that in the past, talking to ourselves, you said like nowadays, like obviously the level of professional looking books is crazy nowadays with like Brand Center and the great portfolio schools out there. But I think you said in the podcast, talking to ourselves, you mentioned like you're looking for people that could solve unexpected problems or solve problems unexpectedly. And even if they don't flesh it out fully, if they have like the concept, maybe is that still acceptable if they're interesting people?
I think so. I really want to get inside your head and see how you think versus how well you can put together your book, because you can get help to do that. No, I do believe that craft is very important these days. It seems to be getting lost, but that's something that you can learn through experience and be taught, but you can't really fake being an interesting thinker. You know, you just, I want to see that point of view. I want to see that unique perspective and someone who comes to the table with a different way of solving problems.
All right. So a college student nowadays, how do you develop interesting ways of thinking?
Yeah. Study, like learn from other people. Philosophy would be a great place to start. Just expose yourself to things you naturally wouldn't be drawn towards. That's kind of what I did as a student and getting into advertising. I used to just purposely go out of my way to find stuff written that for other people, like even like young adult books or just business books or anything that's kind of feels like you're not the audience, just to see how people talk to each other that aren't me. You know what I'm saying?
Interesting. I was an advertising major, which is a whole conversation of itself, but would you recommend like people like that are interested in advertising to look into like philosophy or, you know, English, or if somebody like, what would you recommend? Like what's a good major for this industry?
Philosophy, but you kind of have to know that, you know, There aren't many working philosophers out there, so that's going to have to turn into something else, I think. But it does teach you a great way to think. Yeah. And it helps you understand logic, which a lot of advertising is logic. People think it's wild creativity, but no, it's grounded in some strict logic. I think there's a, you know, there's like almost like a crossover between how a lawyer thinks and how an advertising, you know, writer or creative thinks.
A lot of people on this podcast I've interviewed started off like thinking they were going to go to law school, and then they switch over to advertising and they ended up being like great copywriters.
I think advertising at best is like a closing argument in the mind of the consumer. You know, you're building sort of a logic and a reason and an argument for your point of view.
Interesting. So you said, remind me again, you said you were an English and philosophy, you had like English major?
No, none of this. I was actually journalism. You were close. Mm-hmm. I was journalism and psychology. And that ended up kind of getting me, I graduated with a journalism degree. And then I quickly discovered that's not going to get me a job in advertising. You need a book. So I put together one on my own without going to school. It's kind of learning from some people that I was connected to after I moved out from Ohio to San Diego.
Oh.
Right after school.
Okay. What drew you to San Diego, just other than the weather and how beautiful it is?
That was it. I knew. Okay. I just wanted to get out of Ohio, and I knew I wanted to be West Coast. And I had a friend who lived in San Diego. It seemed nice. So I just moved out there. And then eventually, you know, after I did put together like a really rough and tumble scrappy book, got a job in LA and moved up to LA like a couple years after San Diego.
Okay. So you, because agencies in San Diego, I'm not familiar with any. Did you go out there because you saw some agencies you liked, or are you just like, this is going to be my home base while I build this portfolio together?
It was more about that was going to be my home base, but there was a really great agency. I remember, you know, someone showed me this for the very first time, a communication arts manual or annual. It was the first time I had seen like what really great advertising was. And there's an agency in San Diego called Franklin Stroza, I believe. And John Robertson and John Vitro were a team there that were just killing it. Like they were on every page of CA, and they're still there, I believe. John Vitro has an agency there. And I was like, these guys are amazing. I want to learn from them. So I got an internship there and just, you know, for free, just sat there every day and watched, you know, how these guys worked. And that agency was the one that showed me like what a good portfolio would look like.
Oh,
and then I kind of went off and just kind of did it on my own.
Okay. Were they annoyed by you? Did they give you shots at anything, like any briefs?
They gave me some shots. They gave me some shots. I did an ad that actually got produced there, and I just kept kind of showing up and asking questions. I don't know if they're annoyed. They didn't let on if they were.
Sure. Yeah. No, that's great that they let you sit in and even give you a shot at the brief. Yeah. Would you do that today? Would you let somebody do that in Mischief? Or have you seen any other agencies do that? Just like, hey, come on. If somebody asks, then you could just come on and sit in on a meeting. I know it's virtual today, but have you ever seen that?
Yeah, I mean, we have an internship program, so that's kind of where how that turns out. But I was considering, I guess, an intern there. I just asked if I could. They said, yeah, you're an intern.
I think internships, though, can be pretty difficult to get nowadays.
Yeah, it seems like there's a barrier to entry in some cases, but we try to find people that are outside the loop.
Well, it's like every intern is looking for the same timeline of summer.
Yeah, that's
true. Agency, and there's like a capacity at each agency, and they're only available at this time for the most part. Like that, those are the big internships. But like for jobs, like they can open up at any time. And it's actually like, I feel like sometimes it could be even a little bit easier depending on the job market, of course.
Yeah, I mean, you could always approach someone and say, I'm not working right now, but I'd like to do an internship during the winter, you know, just to see if maybe agencies would be open to during the traditional schedule.
Yeah, that's smart, for sure. Okay, so then you build your book out after you're interning, and then you were also building your book, and then you said you got a job in LA. Where was this at, and what was the role?
This was a place called Mendelsohn Zine. I don't think they're around. They got bought out. But interesting how I got my job there. If I look back on it now, it almost feels like it was like one of those Lifetime movies or something like that. Because it was seen right out of like some cheesy advertising movie. But how I got my book there is I sent my scrappy hand-drawn ideas to the creative director there. Because at that point, they were doing really edgy kind of out in your face kind of work. And I thought it was, you know, a place that I would do well there. And on a fluke, I sent the creative director my book, so to speak. And he called me. He's like, yeah, I like what you're doing. Come on up and meet with me in Los Angeles. And it should have kind of been like a red flag that this is a place that operates a little bit differently and probably works a lot, is that my interview was like at 8 o'clock at night. And
interesting.
Yeah. So I get up there, you know, I know nothing, right? I'm like this young kid from San Diego. I get up there and it's like in this top of the skyscraper in Los Angeles somewhere. You know, right up to the elevator, his assistant, who's like the only one there, all the lights are off. His assistant like sets me outside his door. It's like big, massive doors in this really swanky kind of ad agency. And they open up and like they escort me into the room, and like the longest table you've ever seen. At the end of it, it was this like creative director who was, you know, framed by this massive view of LA. And I'm like, this is, you know, this is like everything they tell you advertising is going to be like in the movies. And he's kind of just sitting there at the end of his desk, and he hasn't looked up for like 2 minutes. So I'm just waiting. And finally, you know, after about 5 minutes, I'm like, are you working on something? And he's like, yeah, I've got this billboard that's due tomorrow. I got a client meeting tomorrow and I'm just working on it because we don't have anything to show him yet. So I asked him what he was working on, and sort of started like concepting on the spot, and I wrote a billboard for him that he ended up selling on my interview. Yeah, that's what I was saying. It's like the Lifetime movie moment.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so he ended up selling it, and then even after that, he was like, I was like, so, you know, what, should I come back? And he's like, yeah, you can come back, but he didn't offer me a job. He offered me a freelance gig to still test me, and then
still test.
Yeah, and keep in mind, I'm a junior. I haven't produced anything in my life other than like that ad they gave me at Franklin Stores. And so my test was, they're pitching BMW dealership, and it was me and another freelancer, and that was basically the creative team, and we won it. And so then I'm like, do I have the job? And he's like, hey, why don't you move up here? So I did, and then
okay, it's a good sign.
Wait. It was a good sign, but he's still like, after I moved up there, he kind of knew he had a good bargaining chip because where else was going to go? You know? So then finally, like after, yeah, it was that kind of place.
Okay.
I hope he's not going to say this, but you know, after a few weeks of freelancing there, I got a full-time job. It turned out to be, it's a really small place, but there's some amazing creatives that went through there. I learned a lot just from the freelancers they hired. Like, and then Harold Einstein, who's now a very, successful, famous director, was a writer they brought as a mentor to me, you know, in my first job. And, you know, I learned a lot from him. We're still in contact.
What's the agency called again? And you said it might not be around.
I don't think it's around. I think it got sold to Dentsu. It was called Mendelsohn Zine. NZA. Gotcha. Mendelsohn Zine Advertising. It's a really small place, but they had done some interesting work at the time. And I was the only writer. So at that point, I got a lot of work. You know, I got to work on a lot of stuff. Back in the day, it was very hard to get a TV brief, but there's nobody else to do it. So I got some TV at a very early stage in my career.
Oh, nice. So while you were freelancing, I want to rewind back, and you weren't like really sure, like he kind of kept egging you on a little bit as a test, maybe. Were you looking at other places? Like, what were you thinking? Like, were you nervous that this might not pan out? Like, you're in this trial run?
Yeah, I really wasn't looking at other places because it was I was so busy there, and it felt like it was going good. Like, we were doing good stuff for this pitch, and then we finally won it. I'm like, yeah, come on. Right.
Yeah.
So I felt pretty good about my chances, and he led me to believe that he's going to make me an offer, but it just might not be the one I wanted. But I kind of had to take what he gave me. And I realized like it was going to be my first job. And I think this is true of any first job, is you're getting paid to learn. So that's kind of took it as long as I can make my rent and, you know, live, that's what I'm here for.
I like that. And so you stuck around there. How long did you stick around there as junior role, I guess?
I was there for like 3 or 4 years, which is a long time at that place for a place that didn't hire a lot of writers, and people kind of cycle through there pretty quickly. But again, I was producing a lot, learning a lot, working some crazy hours. And then I decided, like, after everyone else kind of left, I should go move on as well.
Do you miss like those early days, those long hours being directly tied to the work? Maybe nowadays it might not be as closely tied. I don't know. You have your own agency, so I'm sure you are, but do you miss those like beginning days?
I miss them. I will say I never stepped too far from the work. That's kind of why I got into this. And that is what gets me really interested and excited. So I think any creative should have their hands, you know, close to the work or at least touching it in some way. But yeah, take it for anybody who's just starting out, like cherish this time. You will look back on it and go, gosh, that was fun. I think at the time I was so stressed out about what my next move was and, you know, focusing on, am I doing it right? Am I building? Am I progressing? That I didn't really enjoy the moment. And also at that point, it's so stressful because you don't have a lot to fall back on.
No.
So every assignment has the weight of the world on it. And I was just kind of, I was so stressed out about that and like, you know, making sure stuff didn't die. And like any creative, your favorite stuff doesn't make it to all the way through. And that was like devastating to me at the time. Looking back on it, know that this is a long game and you will produce stuff you like. So you can, you know, you can lit up a little bit, allow yourself to enjoy the moment.
I love that. And do you feel any stress now, like similar stress then as you feel now with your new, relatively new agency?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that ever goes away, but I do feel it now, with especially at the beginning where it's just like, you know, you're starting from scratch and every piece you put out there has to build the brand of Mischief.
How do you hire your talent at Mischief? So you started off, you went to No Fixed Address. I interviewed somebody from No Fixed Address, Christy Lee.
Okay. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Remind me the relationship between Mischief and No Fixed Address, because you're Mischief at No Fixed Address. Can you clarify that for me real quick?
Yeah. I mean, it was a model we kind of created for sort of the way the world was shaping up at 2020, which was like, it felt like the big agency model was kind of cracking and there's a small independent agency model that was good creatively, but it was also very hard to start. You know, it's hard to just start from scratch and open up this thing. So the model we created in talking with Dave LaFont, who started No Fixed Address, would be very flexible. It's like Mischief would be this center of creative excellence, and we would hire, you know, primarily creatively in account and planners. And then No Fixed Address would be this mothership that we could pull in like different departments as we needed. Like Christie's on media planning, we could pull them in. And at the beginning, we can use some of their creatives and planners and account people until we got enough, you know, at Mischief to get started. Because I think that's the hardest part about starting an agency is you have to invest a lot at the beginning. And we didn't have to do that because we pulled from No Fixed Address. And they're really great creatives, really great, you know, smart people from the best agencies in Canada, which was doing great work. So it wasn't like we were getting high caliber people. We were able to pull from the best, but also they weren't on. Yeah, but the benefit to us was we didn't have to carry them on our staff. Yeah,
got it.
So it's a very flexible, interesting model that allowed us, you know, to start off pretty strong.
Yeah, makes sense. So how'd you hire Kevin and Bianca? Were they your first hires? Because I've had them one episode.
They absolutely were. I've worked with Kevin and Bianca at BDO, and I knew that they were an awesome team. And I also just knew that, like, my first team, it would have to be someone that I could immediately hit the ground running that had some relationship with. And that hasn't been the case for the fault anyone else, but that first team was really important to me, that we had a rapport. I knew what they were capable of. I knew the range, because tonal range and range in media was extremely important in the first hire. Because we would be doing, you know, we're setting up an agency, we'd have to be able to work in all sorts of platforms and all sorts of tones. So I knew those guys could handle it.
Love that. And they have a great episode. Those two are phenomenal. But like, so did you hire down then? So from ECDs to, I don't know, what's lower than that? Is that Group Creative Director probably lower than that?
I think from there, we actually hired some interns because we started in the summer, right?
Okay.
We had Kevin and Bianca and myself were creating a lot of the work.
Okay.
Then we also, again, we pulled from No Fixed Address. And
right.
They had great creatives there. And two of those creatives, we ended up just bringing on staff. They moved to New York, or one of them did. So they're permanent Mischief creatives now. So again, we were able to be that flexible. And we hired Hunter Fine, who we had known from before. And again, we had some help with some freelancers and interns. But that was very short-lived. We started to get business and staff up pretty quickly.
Gotcha. And then started hiring like more full-time, not so much yeah. freelance. Yeah.
Yeah.
So those first, besides Kevin and Bianca, you just need some power, get started strong. You had a foundation with those two that made sense. You worked with them. But for those like first couple full-time hires, I want to get into your mind of what you were looking for. I know you're looking for people that think interestingly and they're creative, yeah. but what else were you looking for? Like, I want to get in your mindset on those first full-time yeah. hires, because you're building your baby.
Yeah.
Like, this is your agency.
Right. Especially in the beginning, I think the one thing we really looked for was range. Like people who can do a bunch of different tones, someone who can write, you know, obviously comedy is a big part of what we do, but also someone who could write thoughtful. And that's a lot harder in some cases to do something that's very thoughtful and poignant, but not sappy. And also, when I speak of range, I also mean like people who can do activations, stunts, as well as scripts and, you know, whatever became of print, which is now Instagram, basically, or out of home and things like that. So
I don't think
go ahead.
I was just thinking, like, for the more entry level employees, though, I feel like they don't have range for the most part because you're just starting out. So I'm curious.
You do see that in books, though, especially people coming out of portfolio schools where they, you know, they're given a vast amount of assignments. You can see that they solved problems or solved briefs the way that was fitting for the brand. So if a brand required like a funny tone, you can see that in the work, but not all of it seems like it was written by one person.
Interesting. So, I mean, this is a good lesson here. Like if you're a student or you're looking to break in and you have time to build your portfolio, look for range in your assignments.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we term them Swiss Army knife people, because just someone who could handle a lot of different kinds of assignments and projects.
But for a BBDO agency where you worked for like 14 years?
Yeah, 15 years.
15 years. So you worked there for 15 years, but at a BBDO, are they looking for that same type of person? Or because it's a big machine in a way. I mean, in the nicest way possible, it's a monster. Are they looking for more people that are focused, specialized?
I don't think you can go wrong by having range. You know, I think every agency is probably looking for that. I think what happens at a big place is they can afford to hire the comedy team and then put them on the right kind of accounts. Whereas at a smaller agency, you're working on everything.
Yeah.
So if like a Mars or Snickers is looking for a comedy team, they can hire that. But chances are, no matter what agency you're going to, you're going to be working on more than one client.
Absolutely.
So it never hurts to have range.
Yeah. True. Yeah. Switching around here, I'm curious. I wrote these notes down. You said the best business advice you got was in about 15 minutes. From David Droga. Is that still true or did things change?
Well, I would say the best business as a business owner or someone starting an agency, I would say the best career advice I ever got was, again, very brief, very simple. It was like a small pamphlet I came upon as a, you know, back to my early days in San Diego or place in Southern California, where I was just kind of like, how do you break into business? How do you become successful? So I was like looking through the business section of some random bookstore. And honestly, this is a pamphlet I found there that has probably still to this day one of the best pieces of business advice I've ever gotten. It was simply just that successful people do what unsuccessful people aren't willing to do.
Yeah.
That's it, you know?
Yeah.
So whenever you're putting together your book and you're tired or you don't want to redo something or that, you know, it has sort of served me throughout my career.
I freaking love that. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are some things that you've done that you think some people are unwilling to do? And, you know, whether it's starting out in your career or, you know, starting your new agency, what are some of those things that you think of right away?
It's always constantly improving, getting rid of stuff you don't love and trying to beat your concepts. And like, don't settle, you know.
It's so easy though. It's so easy to settle. It's fun and it's comfortable.
Yeah. I know. That's why I call it settling. But, you know, again, you just come back to like successful people do what unsuccessful people aren't willing to do. And that really does come down to setting a standard and, you know, making sure you reach it.
Love that. And you look for that in your future employees when you're interviewing people, I'm sure as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would say that it comes down to another thing for what I look for, someone that is super willing to go back to the drawing board and not upset, you know, when stuff doesn't happen the way they want it to. It's like, as a boss, you never want to feel like you're pulling something out of somebody or you're forcing them to do something. You want to feel like, okay, this is bad news, but people see it as an opportunity to go back and beat what they had before.
Resilience. How do you measure that though? How do you do you find this in an interview? Are you doing project based stuff? Like what's the route?
You usually kind of have to learn that in the trenches. It's hard to find that in an interview, but it's the people who are just like more than willing to go back to the drawing board, or when you give them an assignment, no matter what it is, they're excited about it. And that was one thing I tried to do as a junior too, is no matter what assignment they gave me, I saw it as a book piece. So
I love that. I love that advice.
Yeah. Always do projects better than they have the right to be done. It's kind of like,
yeah, seriously, especially when you're just starting out, like what could be like a banner ad, like you still have the opportunity to make it great. If there's like a brief that nobody really wants, like go out and tackle it with pride and confidence, because you can, that could change every, you know, that could be really influential.
People notice that. I notice that when I see someone like that really didn't have to be that good, but God, you paid attention to the details and the writing in the caption is really well crafted. Like that stands out to me almost more than, you know, the big campaign.
Love it. How many people are at Mischief right now?
I would say, and it's hard for me to say because we still have some people we share with no fixed address, but people, I usually go by people with Mischief in their email address. That would be about 60.
Wow. Amazing.
Yeah. I know we've grown pretty quick. We're very selective though. Still, even though we've grown this quick, we could have grown a lot quicker, but we try to make sure that everybody here is, you know, kind of serving their purpose and wants to be here and has the right kind of attitude.
Well, I think this was an excellent like insight into how you hire and like your process and your background, like to learn about like Mischief and like the starting of the agency, your episode and the Talking to Ourselves was fantastic. So I would recommend that to everybody to understand what was going on in your mind. Cause it took you like 2 months, right? Since April 16th to June 16th, maybe. I don't know. It wasn't that long, a couple months.
I know. And it felt longer to me because I'm the type of person who wants to know what's next, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not very patient that way. But yes, it was a relatively quick time.
Yeah. But, so what is next with Mischief?
Like I said on that podcast, I think our goal is not to grow for the sake of growth, but to have an impact. And that is what we're focused on. It's like, how can we have the most impact and keep doing work that we're excited about. I'm not, you know, I'm not setting a goal of I want to be this size, because I don't often think that size is the most important thing or necessarily the thing that leads to the best work. So I just kind of want to keep doing work that I'm excited about and that makes, you know, this place different and interesting.
I think you're an agency that people come to for creative ideas, and you guys are not afraid to pitch that to your clients, and you're not afraid to push back, I'm assuming, just from what the work you create. And that's what differentiates good and bad agencies, I feel like. So your ability to push the creative work, it's really obvious. You guys are one of the few people that consistently do that. You're not afraid. I've always looked up to you guys. So, and I've, you know, since you guys started, I've been following along and it's been amazing.
Thank you. I appreciate that. One thing to say about that, though, is it's not necessarily that we're pushing back. It's kind of like we're finding the right kind of clients. And that's come from defining our brand, Mischief as a brand. So people know what we do and why they come to us.
Right.
So, yeah. You'll find
like
that.
They won't even, the people that are not, or they're afraid to push boundaries, they won't even like come up to you guys, you're saying?
Yeah. I'm saying
they know who you guys are and they know your work.
Right. Whereas at other agencies, they might not have come to you for the kind of work that you're trying to sell them. You know, that's where the pushback comes. Yeah, we have great conversations. I think it's more, you know, there's always going to be this, here's our point of view and this is why we do what we do. But it comes with an understanding of it's based in strategy. It's not just because we think it would be fun and cool.
Yeah. You make it explicitly clear that this is what you guys offer. And you guys are strategic and interesting.
Yeah, and I think that's important. And when you ask, like, what's next for Mischief, I think it's just growing that brand and seeing how big we can, you know, how we can scale that in a way that stays true to that brand.
Amazing. Well, I look forward to it. How can people reach out to you if they have any questions about, you know, your story or Mischief or the internship program? What's the best way to reach out to you?
They just come to my house in Brooklyn. No.
What's the address? No, there's no fixed address.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're everywhere. The best way, I'm not great at responding to every email just because I get flooded. Maybe LinkedIn. Just find me at LinkedIn, Greg Hahn Mischief. You'll search that and I'll probably be the only one that comes up under that search.
Perfect. Yeah. All right, Greg, I appreciate you coming on. This has been fantastic.
Thanks for having me. And to anyone out there, if you do have specific questions or are interested in Mischief, now you know where to find me.
Boom. Thank you.
All right. Awesome.
Thank you so much for listening to the entire episode of the Breaking and Entering Advertising Podcast. If you like what you heard, it would mean a lot to us and help us grow if you can just leave us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. And if you have time to leave a small review, that's great too. But really, that 5 stars will help us a lot. And be sure to connect with our guests. We want to help you break in. The way to do that is by going to our Instagram at Breaking and Entering Pod, all one word, at Breaking and Entering Pod. On Instagram, there we have links to their portfolios and their LinkedIn and their secret resources, and they want to connect. So go do that. And some thank yous. Thank you to our creative and production team, Buchan Jung, Juan Camargo, and Mikey Malarkey. And our PR team, led by Nicole Tolochko and the AAF group from the University of Illinois. Thank you all so much, and we will see you next week with another amazing guest.